Hey, this is Double J, Jeff Jarrett, WWE Hall of Famer, and you're listening to the My 1-2-3 Cents Podcast.
It's my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo!
Kevin! You're stupid.
Hey friends, welcome to episode 505 of the My 1-2-3 Cents podcast. I am your host, Kevin Huntsberger, joined this week by Chad Smart. Chad, welcome back to the show.
It's been a few weeks. I'm glad to be here. But before we get started, Kevin, I have a question for you.
Fire away.
I'm looking at your background.
Okay,
I know all the wrestling things, all the, you know, even Garfield, but what is the picture of you over your right shoulder?
Okay. Yeah, I did not. Yeah, that is. So,
and for the people listening on the podcast only, this is a great conversation.
Yes. Yes. So back in my TV days, there was a campaign going on for domestic violence, domestic abuse. And one of my friends who is a photographer was getting different, I hate using the word celebrity, but getting well-known people in the Southern Illinois community to kind of be voices for males, to be voices for domestic violence. And so let me grab it here. So I'm wearing my Lucha Pug shirt and I have a Lucha mask in it, and I'm wearing a cape and it says, "You have the power to unmask domestic abuse." It was kind of cheesy, but they wanted me to incorporate, because they didn't necessarily want me to do the TV station. They wanted me to incorporate the wrestling brand into the message because there were other people kind of promoting their, subliminally promoting, because I don't say anything about My 1-2-3 Cents in the post. I guess it does. It does say blogger, My 1-2-3 Cents. So anyway, that's what it was. And I found it the other day and I just put it up to have it up. But yeah, I didn't realize until I sat down and looked and saw that it was sitting there. So there's also on the very end, a very small Mr. Burns. So okay. Those who are watching can see all my little tchotchkes behind me. But yeah, so that's the story. And I guess it's kind of appropriate that we are talking about, we're going to be talking about women's.
Great segue.
Today. Yeah, great segue, right? It was 40 years ago this week that the brawl to end it all happened. Not to be confused with the war to settle the score, which...
who would do that?
What's that?
I said, who would confuse the two? They're two totally separate things.
We will be talking about the war to settle the score next year in February 1985 is when that went down. The brawl to end it all happened in the summer, July 23rd, 1984, to be specific, on MTV. It aired on MTV. It also aired on the MSG network. But I wanted to talk to Chad about this today because it is the anniversary of the event, and also talk a little bit about how women's wrestling has evolved from the 80s and even prior to that, leading up to this, and wrestling in general. Because 1984, Chad, tell me where you're at. Are you into the wrestling scene? How invested are you in wrestling by the summer of 84?
I mean, if I can remember correctly, I am into the wrestling scene. I know at this time I would have been watching JCP, definitely, because that would have been on TBS. And then in the summer, and I don't remember exactly when in the summer of 84 is when we got the satellite dish. And so that opened my world up to Mid-South. World Class, some AWA. I'm trying to, you know, recall when wrestling at the Chase stopped and WWF.
I think late 82, early 82.
It was really okay. I didn't get into WWF wrestling until after Hogan was champion.
Mm-hmm.
So sometime in 80, but before WrestleMania 1. So sometime between January of 84 and March of 85.
Yeah.
But I would have been watching wrestling, and I don't think when this show happened, as I've mentioned before in the show, I don't think we had MTV on our cable system yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this was, I really got into wrestling big time. I always, you know, I had started watching it very casually in late 82, off and on in 83, just kind of flipping through, but not hooked to it. My dad and brother, like I've mentioned before, were into it and watching it all the time. Mm-hmm. But really, Hulk Hogan and winning the championship, I remember all that very vividly. I remember Black Saturday, which has actually happened 40 years ago this month as well, when Vince McMahon got onto TBS, but it was ill-fated and didn't last very long. And allegedly selling that time slot back to JCP got him the money to fund the first WrestleMania. That's the story behind that, allegedly. But I do remember watching, and you know, back then it was wrestling. It was, it wasn't Wrestling Challenge. What was it called? It was before Superstars. It was Championship Wrestling, that aired on KPLR on Sunday mornings. And this was leading up to that event that we're going to be talking about. Rowdy Roddy Piper was hosting Piper's Pit and having Captain Lou Albano come out, and they kept talking about Cyndi Lauper because they're riding the wave of Captain Lou appearing in that Cyndi Lauper Girls Just Want to Have Fun video. And Captain Lou insisted that he was Cindy's manager and he was going to get her there and yada, yada, yada. And of course, it's two heels playing off of each other. And when Cyndi Lauper finally does come weeks later, they make fun of her and it's misogynistic. And Cyndi Lauper kind of whacks Captain Lou with her purse and hits Piper. And so we're off to the races. And so they're going to settle this little feud that they have with two women wrestlers. Captain Lou finds the Fabulous Moolah, who has held the women's championship for like 26 years, which I think up until that point, no one had seen Moolah on TV, at least in the new Vince McMahon era of wrestling. And they bring in a newcomer, Wendi Richter. And, you know, Wendi Richter to me kind of personified that 80s Valley Girl kind of look, along with Cyndi Lauper, obviously. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of started building from there. And we lead to the start, the foundation for the Rock and Wrestling Connection, which I think then built to WrestleMania, Saturday Night's Main Event, all these extra pay-per-views and things, you know. So in 84, it really kind of started taking shape 40 years ago this summer. And so MTV, of course, gets involved because Cyndi Lauper's involvement in it. And I think her being a fan, and this is why you, Chad, we've talked before, it's a travesty that Cyndi Lauper is not in the WWE Hall of Fame, and we don't know the circumstances behind it. But without her, you know, and we obviously both were growing up in this time period, I can't think of a better person of the 80s than her, and then eventually Mr. T getting involved too, to kind of be those celebrity liaisons between wrestling and Hollywood and mainstream media coverage.
I mean, I think if you could have got Michael Jackson in there, like, I mean, the promo battle between Piper and Jackson would have been something that would not be on the network today because. No, I mean, Cyndi Lauper was, you know, she was popular. Mr. T, you know, it's interesting, I guess, looking back now, because I find it kind of interesting when actors are really big, like on a TV show, but then don't really do anything of note. They just ride the wave of that former success, you know? And so, I mean, Mr. T is still a pop culture icon, but other than some, collect call commercials or flower commercial, what has he done in the last 35 years?
Yeah, that's true.
So, I mean, other than, you know, spending a lot of time with his mom and making sure that his mom knows that he loves her.
But
at the time, the A-Team was a very popular show. I think of actors at that time, unless you're going to bring in Schwarzenegger, who, you know, I think I mean, even Mr. T's size, once he's standing next to Hogan and Piper and, you know, he shown for his small stature.
Yeah.
But I mean, Schwarzenegger is even, I think, maybe a little bit smaller in terms of height. So, you know, you want someone who doesn't look too out of place in there. And obviously, you know, especially, I mean, look at the rest of the A-team. Mr. T was the perfect choice to look like he could hold his own.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. What do you think? Because we're going to do a lot of comparing and contrasting from, you know, 40 years ago to modern day WWE specifically. You know, Logan Paul, I think, is kind of that celebrity that did the crossover that has had success. And I know that there's, you know, criticism about how many times he defends the title or what, you know, when he's on TV or whatever.
And how terrible Prime Energy Drink is. Yes.
But can you imagine back in 84, 85, when Mr. T is on the scene, you know, other than those appearances to kind of promote WrestleMania, and then he comes back and does a little bit for WrestleMania 2, and then he's very sporadic after that, almost to non-existent. Could you have seen him having an actual run as a wrestler and winning the belt? I know they kind of tried it with Zeus in to an extent, but that was more, again, to promote No Holds Barred a few years later. But I think that Logan Paul has been, again, despite his, you know, the critiques of the online community, I think he has definitely been the biggest and best celebrity transition to go from celebrity to actual wrestler. Although I guess you could argue The Miz with The Real World, but anyway, I'm probably going down a different rabbit hole here, but I couldn't imagine Mr. T winning the Intercontinental title, for example, and being a superstar other than what he was already doing.
Yeah, I don't think so either, given the way the business was structured back then, you know, because like, I don't know how much time Logan Paul has spent at the Performance Center. But, you know, back in 84, WWF didn't have their own training facility. You know, guys went to wrestling schools that may or may not have actually taught them wrestling, as opposed to just how to break people's legs and shoot. But so I couldn't see T coming in. And I mean, you know, you watch his match at WrestleMania. He does a serviceable job for what he's supposed to do, but he doesn't really look comfortable in the ring.
Yeah.
So I couldn't see him. I mean, unless they wanted to just go the full David Arquette route of trying to get as much publicity as possible to put the title on him.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good point. The interesting thing I found with doing a little bit of research on the Brawl to End It All, leading up to it, again, we're talking women's wrestling, and women's wrestling was the primary focus. And I think that's, again, because of Cyndi Lauper's involvement, it makes it to MTV. Now, this was not, it's a one-match show from the MTV perspective, but the night was full. This was a regular Monday night MSG show. It aired on the MSG network. You can go back and watch. I found it on Facebook with Gorilla Monsoon and Gene Okerlund doing commentary, which I love Mean Gene as the sick man. But on commentary, especially when it's with another babyface in Gorilla Monsoon, I like that Heenan Monsoon or that Monsoon Jesse Ventura chemistry or Jesse and Vince. To me, commentary is at its best when one is heel and one is face to tell those stories and to make it work better. Anyway, saying all that to say that Hulk Hogan is on this card, wrestling, defending against Greg the Hammer Valentine. This is before Valentine beats Tito Santana for the Intercontinental title. So Hogan is still about 6 months into his title reign and is not the one featured on MTV, which again, I find very interesting. And I couldn't find the copy of what aired on MTV. I remember watching this back in the day, but I don't remember. You and I remember the War to Settle the Score much better, which again, we'll talk about as we get to that anniversary. But you know, this event helped lay that foundation. And I find it interesting that for so many years, women's wrestling was not in the spotlight or wasn't even on the card. Women's matches were attractions. You know, the posters would say plus a ladies match or something. They weren't featured on anything. And for Vince McMahon in 1984 to go all in, pardon the pun, with Moolah and Wendi Richter, I am so interested to know what the long range plan was, because we know about a year and some change later, Wendi Richter is gone after the quote unquote screw job with Spider Lady and doesn't come back to the WWF for many, many years. So I'm curious from your perspective, what do you think, looking back now and what we know and how women's wrestling evolved even after this in 84, that this show was a one match show with Wendi Richter and Fabulous Moolah wrestling each other.
Now, looking at the full lineup of that card, I think it was a one match show. but yeah, I think, you know, probably the reasoning is because Cyndi Lauper, that's your attraction. That's what you're trying to hope people are going to tune in for. And so, you know, having her out there with a women's match kind of keeps the focus on her. Whereas if, you know, she'd come in the corner of Hulk Hogan, then it becomes about Hogan and it becomes, and I haven't seen the match. I can't remember if Cindy gets involved into the match with Richter and Moolah. But really. She obviously, she's not going to get involved with Hogan and Piper and,
right.
You know, so I would think maybe that's the reasoning. And I don't know what the long-term plan would have been either, other than the fact that Cyndi Lauper, again, was one of the biggest MTV artists at the time. And also being that she was from New York, it might have worked out just with scheduling.
Yeah. And I didn't realize, you know, because obviously a year later we're in WrestleMania, you know, we're building up to WrestleMania. WrestleMania happens in March of 85 and then Saturday night's main event. And Cyndi Lauper was around for all that stuff too. So she was still involved with it. And it wasn't, I didn't remember at the time her time being as long as it actually ended up being. So she is there with Wendi. Wendi wins the championship. But again, women's wrestling is still, there are some women's matches added to championship wrestling and we see a little bit more of it. And then Wendi Richter loses the belt to Leilani Kai at the war to settle the score, which again, we'll go into greater detail. But, you know, for women's wrestling to kind of get that spotlight for a bit, and I can remember buying Pro Wrestling Illustrated and, you know, WWF did an issue of their magazine with Hulk Hogan and Wendi Richter on the cover. Wendi Richter was kind of being billed as, you know, pardon me for saying this, but like the female Hulk Hogan. They were hoping to cash in on that appeal with her. And I don't think we really saw another women's moment like this until like the Attitude Era with Sable. And so it's just, to me, it's interesting how we were on a high wave and then it all kind of crashed. And obviously the talent pool was much smaller than it is today. I mean, today I think you could legitimately, with AEW and with WWE, you could have an hour long or maybe even a 2 hour long women centric show, because there is so much more talent out there. So it's just, to me, it's an interesting kind of rise and fall of what happened with women's wrestling, because by WrestleMania 3, there's no women's match. You know, Moolah's there as Harley Race's queen, and Elizabeth is there as a manager. But then we go years. I don't think again until WrestleMania 10 before there's another women's championship match. Sherry Martel comes in for a minute and wrestles as the champion, but nothing high profile or in the spotlight, so to speak. The women become the managers and the eye candy for the guys that are in there.
Now, I'll ask you, because you, I think, have more memory of this than I do. Mad Maxine, who I only know from the Hulk Hogan Rock and Wrestling cartoon. But she had come, did she make any appearances on WWF television?
She had a match or two. And this, I think this was still before the transition, because it went from championship wrestling to Superstars of Wrestling. In 86 is when that transition happened. I think she was there for a minute, and Mula was the manager. And I don't know, I don't remember what happened. I do remember her having a match or two, and I have gone back and seen that, but I had forgotten she was a brief mention, like you said, on the Hulk Hogan cartoon, but she kind of disappeared, I think, after that. I don't really think she wrestled or did much after that, even. You know, and again, yeah, they had all these women who were like Missy Hyatt and Dark Journey and Baby Doll and Precious and Elizabeth that were all outside the ring, but getting inside the ring and actually competing was pretty rare.
Yeah, and I think, you know, just where society was, and I hate to say this, as much as I love the 80s, when I go back and watch things from the 80s and see how, quote unquote, bad things were at that time, you know, the misogyny, I think, you know, the women were seen just as an attract, you know, they weren't, you know, now you could say like, okay, your main event is going to be, you know, Bayley versus Nia Jax, or because I know you're a huge Nia fan, so I wanted to get her in there. Or, you know, over in AEW, it could be Willow Nightingale, Chris Statlander, Britt Baker. You know, it's you could put a women's match into the main event and have the fans buy into it and be interested in it. Yeah. Whereas back in the 80s, you're not, and part of it is the presentation itself. You know, they weren't, like you said, they were very sporadic. You know, it would almost be like having a, and I know this term is totally on PC right now, but I'm, again, going back to the 80s, having a midget match, you're not going, you know, it's that attract, you're just trying to get people in to see something different. And so the women's weren't presented. And so going back to Mad Maxine, and the reason I ask is because if there were plans possibly to do like a Wendi Richter Mad Maxine program, and then if Mad Maxine is gone, and, you know, and allegedly, you know, there was the fallout between Wendi Richter and Vince McMahon, which led to the original screw job. And so it could have just been a bunch of behind the scenes dealings that, you know, cut it off before it ever got started. Again, I don't think women's wrestling would have been anything bigger than what it ultimately was in the 80s, just because we weren't there. And also wrestling, you know, it wasn't as flashy. And I don't know if this will make sense in the way that I'm thinking it, but it wasn't, you know, now again, the women are just as athletic or more so than some of the guys. And so they can put on a, you know, an engaging match. Whereas in the 80s, it's not work rate, you know, it's headlocks and, you know, body slams are the, you know, the big moves. You know, if you could jump off the top rope, you're, you know, your head and shoulders literally above everyone else. But
yeah,
you know,
I'll give it to Mula. You know, she was 60 or 60 ish in this match, this brawl to end it all. And she drop kicks the referee afterward, because the match ends with, you know, Mula doing the back suplex with the German suplex, and Wendy rolls her shoulder up as the referee is counting three, and Mula thinks she's won because she's the one in control. And I'll be honest, and this is going to be cheesy as hell, but when I went back and watched this and Howard Finkel is in the ring and he does the announcement, I got goosebumps, because part of that whole Howard Finkel thing, but then the crowd's reaction, you know, it was something different that they were not used to with the women. And Wendi Richter was kind of the, I hate to say flavor of the month, but you know, that's kind of how it felt when she came in there and then became the face of women's wrestling for a minute. So I just thought that was a really cool moment. And then, you know, I was a big Cyndi Lauper fan already. I had, you know, she's so unusual. And I had all the, I had the cassette tape, and then I had all of the 45s, the singles as well. So, you know, and again, and we'll talk over the next year, building up to this 40-year anniversary and leading to WrestleMania. We're going to talk more about Cyndi Lauper and her involvement and the rock and wrestling connection. And because there are things that are going to happen later in 84 that I can remember still very vividly watching and reacting to. And again, MTV was a great partner in all this. And I know that, you know, MTV has kind of become the joke of, you know, the last time they played music was, you know, 1996 or whatever. But
come on. They had the boy band revolution in 99. Let's give them credit.
You know, but to their credit, you know, they really got on board. And you know, I'm sure it was Vince McMahon's team. It wasn't just Vince McMahon that was behind all this, but really strategizing and using that. And this is where, you know, we kind of also get into the differences. You know, JCP was much grittier. And, you know, even WWF at that time was not as slick and as well produced. You know, we were talking before we started recording about the war to settle the score and how it was, a lot of it seemed ad-libbed, and you weren't, you know, sometimes I think there is a benefit to scripting some of the stuff, especially when you have guys that maybe, you know, and this is really kind of a new era for the guys wrestling, you know, maybe they've been wrestling for 10 years or more, but it's really coming to prominence on a more global scale. And so there's a learning curve, I think, for a lot of those guys too, you know, watching those Piper's Pits and Captain Lou kind of trying to find his way some of the time. And then Cyndi Lauper coming out there. So I just think it was cool to go back and watch and see that evolution and where it had been and where it was at that point. And now, obviously, with the benefit of hindsight, 40 years later, seeing how well it evolved and it has gotten much slicker. But, you know, going back to those comparisons, WWF was more cartoony, obviously, literally had a cartoon. The characters were larger than life and flashier, whereas in WCW or NWA, JCP at the time, it's Arn Anderson and Ric Flair and you know, those kinds of characters that are very wrestling centric, whereas with Vince McMahon and the WWF, it was all about the sizzle and not so much about the steak.
I think everywhere outside of WWF is guys that, you know, you wouldn't want to get into a fight with, and you you know, there's the, I think it's truth that, you know, Bill Watts said it, you know, told his Mid-South wrestler, if you get into a fight and you lose, you're fired.
Yeah,
because no one's going to believe you can, you know, if you can't win a real fight, no one's going to believe you can win a wrestling match. And but I think that, you know, it's an interesting dynamic of the vision that Vince McMahon had. And to totally go down a separate road is, we've discussed this before, it's if Vince didn't have that vision, where would wrestling be today? Because, you know, I think I mentioned last time I was on the show, wrestling doesn't draw. The show draws.
Yeah.
And so if Vince hadn't had that vision, would, one, how many wrestling promotions would still be around on television? And two, how, you know, of those that are around, how many would be drawing more than, you know, 100 local fans?
Yeah.
So, and like I said, MTV coming in 81. So MTV was, and in 84, was also just starting to, I think, have global, or, you know, at least national expansion, because I have a book called I Want My MTV, where it's like the oral history of MTV. And they said the night that MTV launched, all the VJs and the crew in New York had to go over to New Jersey to a bar to watch MTV because it wasn't available in New York.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
And,
that's crazy.
Yeah. So, and I, you know, I told at the beginning of the show, I said, we didn't get MTV until I think late 84 or early 85. And so, so I think both, one, WWF needed MTV and MTV needed WWF. And it was just the perfect synergy at the right time. And I know, you know, MTV went on to do more wrestling content in the 90s, you know, when they started Tough Enough. WCW did some shows with them. and you know, during the Attitude Era. But at the time, yeah, I think it was just a perfect mix of two cultural impacts coming together.
Yeah, and I don't think, and this isn't to disparage, because listen, if it existed, I didn't know about it, but there was not tribalism in wrestling 40 years ago like it is today. Like I said before, I watched anything that we got in St. Louis, I watched it. I was on Central States. I was on Mid-South, which became UWF, Jim Crockett Promotions, WWF, World Class. I was watching all of it. AWA eventually. And so whenever we could get it, we were watching it and enjoying it all. But I can't imagine Crockett, for example, trying to pull off and be on MTV. Like it wouldn't have worked. I think that with the characters and the development and the way things were going in Vince McMahon's WWF, you know, even a few years earlier, I think that there were still some of those larger than life characters in the WWF, like with the Samoans and the Moondogs and those guys, comparatively speaking with Crockett Promotions. But I just can't imagine, you know, I've kind of wondered in my head, you know, what would have happened? Because if you look at that first Starrcade, you know, Ric Flair, well, obviously Ric Flair, but Greg Valentine and Piper and Ricky Steamboat, they're all also on the first WrestleMania. So it's interesting, like if those guys wouldn't have jumped, how would that first WrestleMania have looked? And if they would have stayed in Jim Crockett Promotion, you know, it's interesting how the companies were so different, but were able to attract and get fans and in there. I wonder too, if Crockett would have hired a marketing firm or had somebody on his team that could market, because you had the Rock and Roll Express, which was probably the most over act in that company.
And the most MTV act.
Right. You know, and then you have the Road Warriors and stuff. But there was never any action figures. There were no t-shirts or lunch boxes, none of that merchandise. When you're appealing to that crowd, I mean, I just think in hindsight, obviously a lot of missed opportunities for Crockett and for a lot of them. Obviously that's why WWE ended up growing and surviving and eating the rest of the competition up, basically.
Yeah, I don't, I was sitting here thinking, I don't know when it launched or when it came to be, but after the success of the WWF MTV shows, would it have made sense for Crockett to try to get on the Nashville network and do something with them? Because that is more of the Southern based, you know, and I know when the Nashville network first launched, it was very Southern.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
So,
well, yeah. Cause I can remember back probably 85, 86 Great American Bash. They did those bash shows and had, I think, Waylon Jennings, like they had country acts that were performing at the actual bashes. So yeah, it's interesting to kind of what if and see where things would have gone and how things could have been or might have been different. But you know, all in all, obviously things have gotten better in terms of the way the athletes are in the ring. You know, their performances have gotten better. The mic skills, the camera work, the production, everything has obviously grown and developed and gotten better. And I think it's cool to really, you know, have been on a 40-year journey watching this and seeing it grow and develop and into what it has become today, to a multi-billion dollar empire. And you know, and then you have TNA and AEW and New Japan and all these other companies that are growing and developing and becoming a part of, you know, 40 years from now, what will fans be saying about this time period? You know, it's very interesting transition and thing to be a part of and watch.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, it's, I don't know where we're going to go. And I think there is still room for improvement in certain aspects, you know. I mean, nothing is ever perfect, but.
Right. Except Kurt Hennig.
Exactly. Yeah, I just, you know, again, I think it is a good thing to where we are now, to where we have, one, the variety, two, the mostly respectful presentation of the women's wrestling of, you know, I mean, we still haven't got there with the little people wrestling. I know there is the micro brawlers promotions. But hopefully that will be coming next, and no more midgets masturbating in trash can, though we kind of hopefully have passed that phase. But no, I mean, I think the biggest thing to look forward to is where wrestling is in the broadcast sphere. And then, you know, with Raw moving to Netflix in 2025, who knows what's going on with AEW with their rights are up. You know, it's given the state of entertainment right now. It's just, where are we going to be?
Where are we going to be? Well, Chad, before we wrap things up this week, we had talked about doing some, fun things as a part of the podcast and supplemental videos on the YouTube channel. Again, if you haven't already, subscribe to the YouTube channel, subscribe to the podcast, leave those reviews. And don't forget, this month of July, we are doing the raffle for the My123Cents action figure drive. So you can get the details. It is pinned on the My123Cents Facebook page. It's $5 and that gets you into the raffle. But, you know, our friends Greg and Mike over at here, part of the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network over at Nerd United, do something called Blind Rankings. And this is an idea that has been picked up. I've seen several people do it on TikTok with a variety of topics, different foods and different sporting teams and cookies and candies and all that kind of stuff. I wanted to do a wrestling version of it for this week's podcast. And maybe this becomes a thing that we do on the regular. But I want to blind rank women's champions. And these are all WWE over the last 40 years. I just picked five random names. And so how this will work is I will give Chad a name and then he will tell me 1 through 5 where he ranks them. Now, Chad, I'm going to let you decide your criteria. If you want to rank these as your favorites or if you want to rank these as who you think legitimately the best champions. Because, you know, I've told people before, my favorite is not necessarily the best. Kerry Von Erich was my favorite NWA heavyweight champion, but I don't think he was the best NWA heavyweight champion. So you use whatever criteria you want to use for these and rank them accordingly.
And there's only five, you only have five names.
I have five names. So the first name, and then you tell me 1 through 5 where you would put her.
All right. I think you should have came up with like 20 names and have me rank 1 through 5. It would have been more intriguing, but now with only five names, okay.
Okay, first up, Alondra Blaze.
Yeah, see, and this is where you go, like, do you just go with the Alondra Blaze character, or do you go Medusa Miceli's career? But Alondra, I'm going to put her at 3, hoping that there are at least 2 other people I can think of that I would rank up. But I would put her in terms of match quality and feuds. I think she was pretty mid. She's pretty mid for the overall career.
You know, I'll chime in on this one specifically. She is, and I hate to say this, I hate being negative, especially in today's environment. Mm-hmm. If I had a Mount Rushmore of least favorite wrestlers, she would be on it. You know, and she's recently come out and said some things. And I don't know, again, sometimes I don't know when ex-wrestlers or retired wrestlers, when they get on social media and start making these rants. Part of me wonders, is this just part of the act? Is this just them trying to get a little heat? Or is there like legitimate, like Sergeant Slaughter, I talked about that a few weeks ago, Sergeant Slaughter and Lacey Evans, that whole controversy. So part of it I'm wondering, but yeah, Alondra Blaze, Medusa was never one of my favorites. Okay, up next, Trish Stratus.
I mean, there's one name that I can think of that I think most people would put above Trish, but I'm going to put her at 1 because I think she was probably the catalyst for, I mean, I know the Bellas created the women's revolution and evolution, but Trish is the one who came in totally as eye candy.
Yeah.
Had the, you know, managed testing hour or AKA TNA, get yeah. it? TNA. But she, you know, she put in the work and she put in the effort to become a great women's wrestler. So I'm going to put her number one.
Yeah. I agree with what you said about her kind of changing that mold and really evolving and stuff. Next up is a current wrestler, a current women's wrestler, and that is Bianca Belair.
Hmm. Yeah, this one's tough because I'm thinking of who else is going to be in your list. I'm going to base this mostly off the match that just happened on SmackDown the night before we record this, where she squashed Chelsea Green in 50 seconds. I think Bianca is very talented. I think, you know, she may be the EST of WWF. I don't think the booking in the last 2 or 3 years has done her any favors. I don't think she, so if I was just going talent wise, she would be ranked higher, but as a champion, I'm going to go 4.
Okay. Next up, Sensational Sherry.
I have to go 5 just because, again, saving that number 2 spot for someone that might be in here. And I think Sherry is known more, again, talented wrestler, but known more to be the secondary than the women's champion.
Yeah, I think if there is ever someone who was ahead of their time, especially in the women's world, it was Sherry Martel. But yeah, I agree with you. Who do you think this last one is?
The two top names I think would either be Moolah or Charlotte Flair.
Charlotte Flair.
Okay. And what you said about Medusa is kind of where I feel with Charlotte, where not that she's my least favorite, but I just think that because she has the Flair name and because she was like right there when the new evolution started, I think she got too much too soon to where it was just like, it was like the default. It's like, oh, what are we going to do? I'll put the title on Charlotte. The title on, you know, the fact that she has what, 14 title reigns in, you know, 5-6 years, like it's just too much. So again, I think she's talented. I think, and again, I guess if having 14 title reigns proves, you know, gives her some status in this, in for ranking purposes, but there's just something about her that doesn't connect with me. And I'll mention it off air because it might be a topic for a future discussion, but I can't deny the role that she has played in the evolution, kind of like what I said with Trish, where if it wasn't for Charlotte, and I know also, you know, Sasha, Bailey, Becky being the four horsewomen of the era, but yeah, I think I'm satisfied with putting Charlotte at number 2.
Well, and this will definitely be a topic for a future conversation, but I do want to talk more about John Cena with you in the coming months as he's on his farewell tour. But there's been conversation, and we'll have this conversation in more detail on the podcast at a later time. But since you mentioned Charlotte Flair and her title runs, you know, Ric Flair has stated years ago when he was doing a podcast still that he thinks it would be great that if Charlotte is the one to get that 17th title reign, and that he and John Cena are in the ring to present her with the belt. Now, her being injured for the last, I don't know, several months, obviously, you know, she probably could have won the belt 2 or 3 times in the time that she's been gone. So it's put a kink in that plan. But, you know, Flair was quoted again the other day talking about John Cena and if Cena should get, and I don't want to go too deep into it because I do want to save this for another podcast, but we'll end it with this. Should the 16 reigns be broken. Not necessarily by John Cena or by Charlotte Flair, but, you know, we've had in wrestling, we've had these traditions of these streaks of, you know, for example, The Undertaker at WrestleMania. And that came to an end. And I think in hindsight now, a lot of people are like, that probably wasn't best for business, or that wasn't the best idea. Honky Tonk Man's long reigning intercontinental run, 35 years, he was the longest reigning champion, and Gunther ended that. So do you think that, you know, 16-time heavyweight champion should come to an end? And I know there's probably an asterisk that needs to go along with that, but
I was going to say, I think Flair has 21. That's what they're saying in AEW. So when he would come in, you know, I think it's just, it's a different time, a different era. So whereas I think it's kind of like baseball when you have guys that are breaking records, but they say, oh, well, they played more games than, you know, guys in the past.
Yeah.
You know, in the 70s and 80s, the title wasn't hot shotted as much. You know, and if it was, it was on non-televised, non-reported, you know, just a local loop to get people to come in.
Yeah.
As we've seen with this, I guess, the start of the Attitude Era, where the title became more of a prop and whatnot. So, I mean, as a Flair mark, and I know that becomes harder and harder to do with every time Rick posts out a tweet or something. I don't want to see that record broken just because it's Flair, and because I don't think Cena's title reigns are as memorable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, speaking, I mean, if we're saying Cena's going to break it, but the way things are going, I can't see one guy, Pete guys have longer careers in one place now, it seems. And two, the nature of the business is, I think after we got through the 3-year Roman Reigns title reign, I don't think we're going to see a lot of those type of reigns anymore. It's no pun intended, but it's going to be broken at some point.
Yeah.
Do you give it to Cena on his farewell? We'll save it for, I'll save my thoughts for the podcast, but yeah. I was just going to ask you before we go, like, now that he's now announced the farewell tour, are we going to his last WrestleMania? I'm still saying we have to go because it's Vegas. I want to do double doink, and it only fitting in Vegas.
I'm not confirming or denying at this point. I've got to do some convincing here. So, but it would be fun for sure, for sure. But I do have a list. I'm finishing it up of topics and ideas and stuff for podcast over the next several months. And like I said, kind of, we're getting into now the 40-year anniversary, a lot of the fun, cool stuff from the 80s that really kind of got us hooked as fans. So we'll be talking more about that, looking at those old matches and doing some other fun stuff. So if you have ideas or suggestions, throw them out there. Let me know via social media, wherever you listen to this podcast, leave a comment or whatever. But Chad, it's been fun catching up and talking 1984, and we've got more coming up in the very near future.
Yeah, it's been great. I'll just remind people about the little contest you have going on, and say that they should win, because I have even more stuff to send you for the prize vault.
And yeah, like Chad said, check it out. It is primarily on the My123Cents Facebook page, but you can find it on other social media platforms as well, or join the My123Cents Facebook group. We will have lots of conversations and fun going on there as well. Friends, thank you so much for listening and or watching. Have a great week, and we will talk again soon.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.